So much to dive into here today on Second Down. Christian Gokel alongside Cody Queen and Cam Rusher here on ESPN Radio. Glad you're hanging out with us on this Tuesday afternoon. I mean, it's Atlanta versus Philly day, guys. We have Hawks, 76ers coming up tonight. The Atlanta Braves also in Philadelphia as well, starting a three-game set against the Phillies as the Braves look to play catch-up against the New York Mets, who currently lead the division by 3.5 games. Also have some news coming out around the world of college football as well that I want to dive into, and some interesting quotes from Falcons head coach Arthur Smith that we'll get into a little bit later on the show as well. Coming up a little bit later, about 2 hours from now on 3 and Out, we'll talk to former Georgia running back and former first-round pick of the Denver Broncos, Knowshon Moreno. That's coming up at 4 o'clock. But going back, guys, again, two Atlanta teams in Philadelphia right now. I want to start with the Hawks and the Sixers tonight because yesterday – and I still think this, and it's just math, and it's just watching the NBA for a while and knowing that typically this is how it evens out. I got a bad feeling that the Hawks are about to get dusted tonight just because of the fact that they're playing against a one seed. They won game one. Typically when a one seed loses game one, they come back and just absolutely demolish the team in game two. So, Cam, I hope I'm wrong, but I got a bad feeling about tonight for the Hawks.
You're probably right. The Sixers figured out the game plan at the end of the game. Put Ben Simmons and Thibault on Trae Young, trap him, get the ball in his hands. That's how they make the big comeback. And that's probably what they're gonna do at the beginning of game two. They know they can't afford going down 2-0. They go down 2-0, the series over. I think the Hawks beat them in five. But, they're probably going to put Ben Simmons, Thibault, and – trap him the whole game, try to get the ball out of Trae Young's hands. So I got Philly tonight.
Well, I mean, Cody, the Hawks, and this is why I think game one's so weird. BJ and I disagreed about this. I thought you can't count on unbelievable performances like you saw out of the first quarter with the Hawks. Like, you're not going to have that in every game. I think it's going to even out more than that. And some other things inside of that where I think the Hawks probably come back to what they averaged all year was the Hawks typically hit about 12 three-pointers a game. For as much as everybody said the Hawks are this deadly three-point shooting team, which they are, it was more so spacing out the floor by being able to hit those threes and then getting inside a lot, which they're really – I mean, John Collins, Clint Capella on the alley-oops, they're able to drive Trae Young, getting the floaters to go in.
The weird behind the head.
Yeah, that's layups, that's why – he's deadly with that floater. Yeah. But that's why – that offense had been so efficient, it's not relying on hitting 23-pointers like they did in game one of this series. I have to imagine that Nate McMillan has something better playing than what he had in game one to handle the traps, because once that started coming out in the second half, the Hawks, that's when they started seeing the slide. Their scoring went down, and then with the turnovers, the 76ers were able to start coming back up the other way. But I'm just looking at this one, and I think maybe that first quarter – just kind of a mirage in the distance in the desert. Like, it's you think you can have it, it's there, you're thirsty, you want it, but is it real? I don't know that that's necessarily real. I don't know if we can count on the Hawks scoring another, 40 points in the first quarter?
No, I don't think it's going to happen again. I don't think it's realistic. I think it was fun to watch when it was happening, but they need to, exactly what you were saying, they need to depend on the guys in the paint and all that stuff. Don't really go for the threes all the time. They did awesome on the threes, yeah, but like they've been known to be I better use my quote hands right now, but they've been real good in their arch, you know what I mean? Like, we're real good on the two and stuff like that. Good drawing fouls, actually. They're really good at drawing fouls, like really good. And they make their free throws, which is amazing, but what they need to do, it sounds weird, is stop Ben Simmons from going perfect.
I don't think they have anybody that can stop Ben Simmons. I mean, Cam, am I wrong?
On the three, don't worry about him. But as soon as he gets in the paint, dude, he scores.
He's not going to shoot threes is the point. Like, Ben Simmons, like, when Ben Simmons gets the ball at the top of the key and he decides he wants to go to the hole and you have Joel Embiid and Clint Capella has to be on him, Cam, I don't think there's anybody on the Hawks roster that can stop Ben Simmons.
Nah. The only person I could think is DeAndre Hunter, but might be too young, too inexperienced to guard Ben Simmons.
I don't think there's many players in the league that can stop Ben Simmons when he wants to get to the hole.
Nah, when he puts that head down, it's not a lot of guys that can stop him from getting to the rack. So you're right. I'll give you that one.
He made for 7 for 7, made it easy, too.
Well, and here's where I think the Hawks maybe play defense by giving up the two-pointers, I guess, is let Joel Embiid and let Ben Simmons, like, one-on-ones is fine. I wouldn't worry about trapping either one of those guys. And when those guys start posting up somebody or when Ben Simmons goes ISO at the top of the key, just stay in man and just make sure you don't leave that three-pointer open, because that's when the 76ers start getting deadly. I think the strategy probably for the Hawks is let Joel Embiid go out there and get his. Let Ben Simmons go out there and get his. Just lock up everybody else. Yep. Don't let Curry get open for the three-pointers, right? Just don't give up those wide-open three-point attempts, because, I mean, if Joel Embiid goes out there and gets 40 and Ben Simmons goes out there and gets 30, it's like, yeah, those are like huge numbers. 70 points.
Yep.
Just don't let the other guys, the role players, start to destroy you. And I think that's maybe what the Hawks can do. And we kind of saw a lot of that. There wasn't a lot of help defense rolling over when Joel Embiid started backing down Clint Capella, right? I mean, you had John Collins on the paint on the other side. He could come over and help a little bit. But for the most part, that's how they did it. And then Ben Simmons, again, if he's going to go 7-for-7, I think that's a win for the Hawks. Like, if he only has 7 field goal attempts, I think that's a win for the Hawks. I don't think that's what we're going to see from him again. I think they're going to put the ball in his hands a lot more. But here's the one question I have for you, Cam. He played pretty much lockup defense on Trae Young from the start of the second half. Do you think he can do that for two full halves? Excuse me.
Oh, that's hard, because I don't think people understand how in condition Trae Young is. He's running around all the time. I say yes, because Ben Simmons is in good shape too. And his length is a problem. It's not the fact that he's faster. He's just 6'10 with like a 7-foot wingspan. So I give him that, but they're going to try everything, throw blitzes at him, traps, all of that to get the ball in Trae Young's hands. Somebody else is going to have to step up and be a secondary ball handler.
Well, I think it's got to come down to Bogdan, right? I mean, he's that guy he hit the clutch shots in game number one coming out at the end, where it looked like the Hawks were going to blow that game until he hit that three-pointer. And then you had Kevin Huerter, I thought, stepped up in a big way as well in his limited time, hitting the shots he needed to hit and then hitting that clutch pass down the middle of the court to John Collins. But, I mean, that stadium is going to be absolutely nuts tonight.
Oh, yeah.
The 76ers are going to come out. And what you saw at the start of the second half is what you're going to see at the beginning, probably three-quarters court press. You're going to see a lot of traps at the beginning. The intensity is going to be ramped up, because – I just felt like they were asleep in the first quarter. They weren't attacking. They were turning the ball over. Nobody was guarding Trae Young. It just felt like the 76ers were asleep in the first quarter. They got punched in the mouth, and they really responded in the second half, got that game to within 2 points after being down 20 at halftime. That's what kills me about the whole – and I understand a win is a win, and Kevin goes, you know what we call losing close? Losing. It's like, I get that, but when the 76ers outscored you by 16 points in the second half, that's kind of worrisome to me.
Well, it also rolls over to the next game. Hey, man, we did work at the end. We didn't get it. We were close, but we put in work. We got this. So you're going to go into the next game thinking, dude, I said, dude, they're scared already. You know they are. They're scared already. So we coming.
I'm not going to say the Hawks are scared. I've seen Trae Young be
dominant. No, well, I'm not saying that they actually are, but in the locker room, that's what you're saying. You know what I mean? That's exactly what you're saying. Like, we got them on their heels
more
now.
More so than anything, I'm saying, they, looking at Ben Simmons, they got looking us at Joel Embiid, I'm saying, they have nothing for you.
Yeah, it's exactly.
They have nothing for you.
Yeah, like, look what we just did. Hey, we started off rough. We were sleeping, blah, blah, blah. Now we're woke. Now we're going. Now it's going to happen. And I bet you he's got
you
the boys.
The 76ers over
he's
here,
got
dog.
The boys going, because they're good, down. Dude. And they don't stay down for long. They're really good. Obviously, I want the Hawks to pull
I don't
this
know,
out.
Cam, how many
but
deep
I'm scared
runs,
of the 76ers.
How many, I don't know why we've started doing this. I don't know. How many deep runs have we seen from the 76ers?
I've been saying for years, they're the most overrated team I've seen in a long time. I don't think they're all that. I really don't. And that's just me. I think the Hawks actually have a chance of beating them. I'm not going to jinx the Hawks, but I am not.
I agree.
I understand what you're saying, Cody. They have two of the best players in the NBA. They're a very good team, but they have no track record to go like, hey, this is one of those teams. They've been here before. They know how to do it. Like, they
that doesn't mean you shouldn't be scared of them.
They don't have that track record. They're a really good team, but they don't have that track record. And, again, the Hawks.
Hawks don't have that track record.
The Hawks playing their second.
Simmons holds them back.
Well, no, and that's why I think a lot of people are saying this is now a toss-up, because you don't know what to expect from either one of these teams in the playoffs. Playoff basketball is so different than regular season basketball. That's what happened to the Knicks, right?
Yep.
The Knicks got that 4 seed by playing just grind out, dive for every ball, hard-nosed defense, body check kind of basketball for every game during the regular season. And then what happened when they got to the postseason, they ran into, oh, crap, everybody's playing like this now.
Yep.
And we can't score and keep up. That's what happened to the Knicks. it's so different from the regular season to the postseason. We have no idea what to expect from either one of these teams. And so, and
I think it'll go game seven.
I don't know. I really don't know where I'm at in the series right now. Because again, what if the Hawks get beat by 20 tonight, what does that tell you? I mean, it tells you that the Sixers are a one seed. Like, I don't know what that tells you about the series. I think we all can agree that the 76ers are the better basketball team.
I think so.
But yeah, we can all also agree. I think Trae Young, maybe out of everybody outside of Donovan Mitchell, Cam has had the best like individual playoff performance so far. I mean, I'll throw Devin Booker in there too.
Luka?
But Luka's out, dog. Like, of guys who are still playing.
Who are still,
guys who are still playing.
Lacing up the sneakers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, all the young guys. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying all the young guys. I'm saying all the guys that are left.
In general, yeah.
Oh, Kevin Durant.
Oh, last night?
He was nasty last night. Yeah. I mean, I heard Mike Greenberg on his show yesterday say that he was like, you know, I think Luka Doncic might be the best scorer in the game right now. I was like,
this is ridiculous.
The slim, the Slim Reaper.
I'm still going by the Nets winning it all this year. I said it at the beginning of the playoffs. I think they're going to win it.
I mean, that's like picking Alabama. Like,
I'm just saying. I'm just going, dude. There are that. Yeah. It's an easy pick. Yeah, it's an easy pick.
You know, I mean, I want the Hawks to do something stupid, but like if we're being realistic, I would love to see Chris Paul get one. I think he might have the team to do it. I mean, what's the storyline around Chris Paul? Can't get past the conference championship, right? Chris Paul's never been to a finals, right?
Never.
Nah, he's only been to one conference finals. That was 2 years ago, three years ago.
I would love to see him make it to an NBA finals, but it'd be really cool to see it against the Hawks. But I am not buying stock in that as of right now. I want to take a quick break here. Some developing news out of the world of college football that could change the landscape as we know it as soon as a couple years from now.
Yeah.
We'll dive into that when we come back right here on Second Down. Second Down on ESPN Radio is presented to you by The Uniform Source. Christian Gokel alongside Cody Queen and Cam Ursary here on ESPN Radio. Always excited to talk college football and some potentially breaking news. You know, if we're doing like the smoke and fire comparison, there's some smoke out there right now. According to Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports, sources around the college football playoff have indicated that the 12-team model is the early favorite to emerge as the next version of the college football playoff. Now, that wouldn't happen this season or next season, but they are having meetings, and this Friday I think will be a big day for that as they meet in Chicago to discuss this. They've had a committee for the past 2 years that's been doing research around the different models, the current format, to see what would behoove the college football playoff and the sport of college football the most to have as its playoff system. Few things that I want to dive into here on this. What it could have looked like in years past, because I think that's a good way to get perspective about judging it going forward. But just kind of reading into this, because I made a graphic about what it would have looked like last year, and as I was putting the graphic together, I was like, so 12 teams, that would mean the first four would get a bye. So last year, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame would have gotten a bye, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then you would have had, I'm assuming, the other four games take place at the home stadium of the higher seed. But here's what I noticed after that. After you play those first four games, you know how many games are left, Cody? Seven.
Okay.
Six New Year's Six games and a national championship. So I am not surprised at all. And if anything, I would say this is more likely than not going to happen for the simple fact that there's no more rotating semifinal spots for the New Year's Six Bowl. Every single year, they are going to be the most important games of the year. So I kind of made an example last year. You would have had Cincinnati and Georgia still playing. Georgia would have had to head to Cincinnati. But if Georgia had won that game like they did the Peach Bowl, then they could have potentially go to play Alabama in the Peach Bowl. You would have had the Fiesta Bowl as another neutral site, the Orange Bowl as another of the quarterfinal spots, and then the Cotton Bowl as another of the quarterfinal spots. And then you could have used the Sugar Bowl and the Rose Bowl as your two semifinal spots. I mean, Cam, there's a lot of talk out there about six teams, right? Because it's just two more. It's the easiest, most palatable thing for all of the folks who want to maintain the purity of bowl season, right? Two more games. All right, fine. Eight teams is the one I had heard the most. Most people saying just go ahead and double the size. You can go five Power Five conference champions, one G5 team gets in, and then you could have two at-large bids. But the 12 makes the most sense for me for the simple fact that you get all six of the New Year's Six bowls in there.
I agree. 12 makes the most sense. But being realistic, it'll probably get to eight and be like that for a very long time. In just my opinion, if you expand it to 12 or 8, whichever one, it's going to make the season even more competitive because now people are fighting for them spots. Normally, a team loses and they're pretty much done. Like, okay, we're not going to make the playoffs anymore. It's only four teams being left. They have to expand it, but I love this. I'm looking at the format now that you guys upload. I like it. I think six New Year's Six bowls, it would be cool. Like, I really like it a lot. So, and it's going to bring out competition from other teams.
Well, I think the concern, and I'll say this, once I kind of realized, and some other people pointed this out too, but once I kind of realized that by doing the 12 games, you could just keep those six games in there constantly as the most critical games of the season, I think where there's smoke, there's usually fire, and I'm thinking this is probably what's going to end up happening is this 12-game format, which I don't inherently hate. What are some of the drawbacks people say about this? Number one, do you take a regular season game away? Are you now eliminating a regular season game? Because if you think about it,
why not?
If you kept it the same, well, I think there's a few reasons for that. We'll get to them in a second. But if you kept it to the same and say Georgia went to the SEC championship, or Florida, we'll go Florida because Florida did go to the SEC championship. Florida goes to the SEC championship in a typical year. That would be game number 13 for them. And then they lose to Alabama, so they have, but they get selected into the quarterfinals. Then they have, that would be game number 14. They make it from game number 14 to the semifinals. Then all of a sudden, or this wouldn't even be quarterfinals. They make it to the quarterfinals. That would be game number 16, 17, potentially 18.
Getting 13, in it already, boys.
13, 14, 15, 16, 17. 17,
excuse I like
me.
It.
But, I mean, you'd be basically playing a 17-game season.
I like it.
Cam, you throw your arms up like this, but the reality you have to look at, even with name, image, and likeness, these are still student-athletes. Like, are we really willing to have unpaid athletes playing 17 games?
Yes. Yes and no. That's why I said eight
And
games.
It would be only two teams would do that.
Yeah.
And I guess if Notre Dame made it, they'd only play 16 because they don't play a conference championship.
Yep.
But I think potentially what you could see is them taking away a regular season game. And you ask, why does that hurt? Well, it hurts everybody who doesn't make the college football playoff because that's one less game they can play and one less chance to make money.
True. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think they will take away
and
a
so,
game.
But no, but
I think they'll just continue.
But if you take a game away, who's the most likely game that gets taken away? An out-of-conference game. Who's the most likely out-of-conference game that gets taken away?
Smaller schools lose money.
Your quote-unquote cupcake game, right? That's what gets taken away. And I know a lot of people are like, yeah, fine, get rid of the cupcakes. There is an economy inside of college athletics that are built on the cupcake games. Number one, you're already playing a long season, and so when you get to the week before your final game and you're usually playing a rival, at least in the SEC, you're playing like a rival that last game of the season, you want that one to give – maybe some of your starters a breather that week, but you still get some game reps. And at the same time, when Austin Peay comes in and catches that 65-10, fine, we're still walking away with $1.5 million check.
Yep.
And that can fund their athletic program for the next year. So there's a huge economic boom that happens when these games get scheduled and they sign on for these huge contracts. And so I think you're probably right, Cody. If they do go to this, I don't think they get rid of anything. And
yeah,
they just say, listen, two teams a year, if you want to make it to the national championship, you're going to play 17 games.
You can opt out if you want, but there's going to be more ball
and
coming.
To be fair, I mean, the top four teams, they wouldn't have to. If you make it into the top four, you're playing 16. And if you make it to the national championship. But I think it's interesting, and looking back at last year, I mean, let's talk about some of the games you'd be looking at. We mentioned it already. Georgia would have been playing at Cincinnati in the first round. You would have had Coastal Carolina at Texas A&M. So, I mean, B.J. Yes. Bennett, B.J. Bennett riding for the Chanticleers all year last year, would have gotten their shot against the number five ranked Texas A&M Aggies, a team that played Alabama relatively close, at least for a little while, and really started to catch fire at the end of the season.
Really did.
And so you would have had the Chanticleers, who beat Zach Wilson and BYU, against Kellen Mond and Isaiah Spiller and Buddy Johnson, those guys out at Texas A&M at Kyle Field in front of 100,000 people. That would have been awesome. On the flip side of the bracket, you would have had Iowa State at Florida.
And all people were like, Iowa State need to be higher, blah, 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 you know? Like,
I'm gonna say this. I think Florida would have beat the hell out of Iowa State.
Oh, no, I agree. It would have just been proven. Be like, hey, yeah. Hey, dude, come on. Come on. It's the SEC team. Come on.
And then on the other side, you would have had Oklahoma or Indiana at Oklahoma, which, you know, Indiana – appreciate the effort.
Sorry, yep.
Yeah.
This hey, you made it. Be, good yeah. job, guys.
Appreciate the effort. But, I mean, I'm looking at the bracket now, and then so if you say Georgia beat Cincinnati again, you'd have Georgia-Alabama potentially like in something like the Peach Bowl. Do we want to say the Chanticleers would upset Texas A&M? Are we riding with the Chanticleers?
No.
Okay, so Cam votes for Texas A&M. Cody?
Yeah, I know last year, you know, I liked
you like
Texas
the mullets?
A&M.
Oh,
I like
Texas A&M. All right, so Texas A&M, you would have had Notre Dame, Texas A&M in the Fiesta Bowl, which would be an awesome game.
That would have been awesome game.
How about this Orange Bowl? Florida, Clemson.
Clemson playing close.
Travis Etienne, mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence. You'd have Kyle Pitts, Kyle Trask, Kadarius Toney in that game.
Dude.
All first-round picks. That would be – or not Kyle Trask, but the other guys, all first-round picks. That game would be unbelievable. I'm not entirely convinced after watching Florida at full strength against Alabama in the SEC championship game that Florida with a full complement doesn't beat Clemson.
No one would have opted out if they would have been like this. They'd be right. Like, hey, man, we're playing for something. So you would have had all
play for
them.
Something. Play for a championship.
Yeah, exactly. That's
then
what
you
I'm
have,
saying.
Then you have Oklahoma, Ohio State potentially in a Cotton Bowl. That game would be unbelievable. And then, yeah, sure, a lot of people could say, hey, Notre Dame probably beats Texas A&M. Alabama houses Georgia again. And so, look, it's just Alabama and Notre Dame again. Fine. You could say that Clemson beats Florida and Ohio State houses Oklahoma, and so it's Clemson, Ohio State again. Fine.
You could say that.
At least you gave the Chanticleers the opportunity.
Thank you.
Right? At least Cincinnati had the opportunity to go and host Georgia in a college football playoff game, right? At least Iowa State had the shot. Indiana had the shot to take on some of these teams. And I think an argument could be made that a team like Florida, who had the weirdest upset, I'd say, of last year when they lost to LSU, but then you saw what Florida could really do against Alabama – it's like, all right, well, do we really want a three-loss team making the college football playoff? It's like, dude, I think we can all sit here and say that team was unbelievable.
Yep.
Right? So you get a chance to see maybe Florida makes a run there because I don't think anybody wanted to see that Florida offense.
No, nobody wanted that smoke.
I mean,
yeah,
Alabama
yeah.
had nothing yep. for that Florida offense. So I think it's fascinating.
I love it. I love it.
But I don't think it takes away from the regular season like everybody's saying.
No, you don't need to take away a game. You don't do anything like that. And all these schools are asking for, literally all they're asking for is a chance. Like all I want yep. is a chance. Cool, I got beat down, this and that. I just want
this. Well, here's
a
what my
chance.
Question would be is like everybody's saying like, oh, it's just going to be a ton of blowouts. What has it been already?
Exactly. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
What Preach. Has it been already?
Preach.
Go to this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State beat the hell out of Clemson.
Bad.
Alabama smoked Notre Dame.
RIP, dude.
Didn't Joe Burrow throw 6 touchdown passes in the first half against Oklahoma?
Yeah, he did.
We
hey.
Haven't had a close national championship in a long time since yep. Jalen Hurts, Deshaun. Oh, no, since Georgia, Alabama. That was the last close national championship.
You're right.
Yeah, because Clemson
housed Alabama.
Yeah, beat the hell out of Alabama. Then LSU did it to Clemson, and then Alabama, yeah, yeah did it
Sorry,
to
I almost spit
Ohio
everywhere.
State. Yeah. So yeah, it's been interesting. So I just say like, at least you're giving an opportunity for some parity out there, right? Like,
yeah.
like say Cincinnati, they have the home game. That game was close in a neutral site. Cincinnati beats Georgia, and they get to go to a quarterfinals game against Alabama.
Yeah, that's why I kind of want more of an organizational thing. What it may not be up to the kids, but most of the kids were just like, that's all we want is a chance. And this would give them a chance. I wouldn't say there'd be more complaints from them. I would like to talk to Ben about this.
And I think it'd be easier to say, get the hell out of here to the 13th ranked fan base versus the 5th ranked fan base. Because every year it's the 5th and 6th ranked fan base that are like, we should have been in the college football playoff. That's tough because you're like, yeah, I mean, there's an argument. There's a really good argument. The 13th, you're like, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
13th ranked team in the country.
Come on, man.
Go play in the Outback Bowl.
Were they the Chanticleers last year?
No, the Chanticleers were 12. That's why
12,
we have
12.
Them.
Okay.
That's why we have them in the
Now I know what you're saying. Oh, the 13th. Oh, it's always going to be something. It's always going to be somebody. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
if you make it a 64 team playoff, the 65th team is going to be
good. Man, we should have been there.
Yeah, so I mean,
we should have been there instead of freaking a Virginia Tech University. Like, okay.
Unless you're going to do it like the English Premier League where everybody just plays a home and home against everybody else, and there's never going to be like a 1,000% fair way to do it. But talking about the logistics of it and what the criteria would be, the early reports, again, these are from unnamed sources, but inside the college football playoff and around the college football playoff, it would be guaranteed slots for the five conference champions. So what does that – or Power Five conference champions. So what does that do? That keeps you your viability with the conference championship.
Yes.
The SEC championship game doesn't necessarily lose value, right, which is the most watched college football game outside of the college football playoff every single year,
yep.
Right? So that doesn't lose value. The ACC championship, the Pac-12 championship, Big 12, Big 10, those games don't lose value because if you win that, you're in, mm-hmm. Right? Give one spot to the highest-ranked G5 team,
yep.
And then the rest are at-large bids. So the other six would be at-large bids, which I think is fine.
I love it. Dude, I love it. So you're going to make my day today, either Christian Gokel.
I don't want to make your day yet because like we don't know this is going to happen. We'll have more clarity.
Potentially
coming on Friday, but I'll say this.
Okay.
I think after seeing the report from Pete Thamel and others, I know Heather Dinich put out an article on ESPN.com. After seeing these reports and then just kind of thinking about it and logistics and the greed that is inherent in all this and just saying instead of rotating semifinal spots every year between our six featured games,
yeah.
Why don't we just keep them all in there as featured games every single year? I think where there's this much smoke, there's probably fire.
Mm-hmm.
I think the next version of the college football playoff we see is going to be a 12-team.
And it's not going to be exactly. Everybody says that's going to be expanded a little bit, like maybe camps is 8. I don't think so. I think it's going to be once they expand it, this crap ain't going to change for
a minute. If you're going to money grab.
Yeah, they're not going to change it for a minute. Like the way they're going to, it's not going to be 8 and then eventually do this. Once they change it, I think they're tired of it already. They're going to change it. Like that's it. It's going to be like this for 100 freaking years, and this is the way it's going to happen.
No, I we've only had the college football playoff since 2014.
Yeah.
Before that, we only had the BCS from the late 90s. And so like it's a decade that we potentially will have these things.
100 years. Watch.
Yeah, I mean, 100 years and a decade. Exactly the same, according to Cody Queen. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about this some more. Maybe some teams that will have some arguments. Who could be the top 12 teams this year coming up? Should there be more criteria than just college or the conference champions? We'll dive into all of that. Braves with a big series coming up against the Phillies. And we'll talk some more Hawks and 76ers when we come back as well. All that coming up right here on Second Down. Second Down on ESPN Radio is presented to you by The Uniform Source. Christian Gokel alongside Cody Queen and Cam Urscher here on ESPN Radio. Just a few more thoughts as reports coming out from Pete Thamel of YahooSports.com that the college football playoff and some people in and around it are considering a 12-team playoff, and that has become the preferred format from a lot of folks around the college football playoff. We were talking about how it makes a lot of sense. Just because you already have six New Year's Six Bowls, you just make those featured games every single year. A couple other thoughts I wanted to dive into here. Potentially what you have, because I've always been staunchly against making...
Staunchly
against making or guaranteeing slots inside of this to conference champions or anybody. Here's the potential risk that you run. If a team, say, wins their division by going, I don't know, 6-6. It's a bad division, right?
Bad.
It's in the Pac-12 or it's in the ACC. It's a bad division. They go 6-6 and somehow pull an upset in their conference championship game. All of a sudden, out of 130 teams, one of the guaranteed 12 slots in the playoffs is going to a 6-6 football team. Or a 7-6, I guess, at that point.
Yes.
At that point. That's one thing they're going to have to consider. I think they're going to weigh that out and say, hasn't happened yet.
Oh, well.
Hasn't happened yet.
Let it roll, boys.
Hasn't happened yet, so we're just going to take that risk and hope it doesn't happen. And if it does, you know what?
I hope it does.
They probably get bounced in the first round. We'll make sure we match them up with someone really hard. The other thing about that, too, is...
Do you hope they don't do good if that happens? I hope they ride all the way like the Giants did the Super Bowl. Let's go, baby. We rolling.
We got 9-7 teams winning the Super Bowl.
Yes, dude.
I think what they would do is just put them in like the hardest bracket they could find.
And then they win and keep on going, dude. Yeah,
you know, I mean, probably not.
It'd be fun to watch, right?
Probably not if I had to guess.
You'd have the whole nation captivated by that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be Pitt. Let's be honest about it. It would be Pitt. Pitt would find a way to win their division.
And then
just upset somebody in the ACC championship game and just wreck the whole party. But I do think that one concern around this, and this will be the conversation you see, is players' rights. I mean, we've seen this a lot. I mean, since the desegregation of college sports, I don't think we've had a more significant offseason in terms of players' rights. I mean, name, image, and likeness. You're having new rules passed inside of the NCAA that is reducing the amount of contact practices and the reporting abilities. But inside of this, again, potentially a team that doesn't get that first round bye, if they make it to the national championship, will play 17 games.
Yeah.
And so I think with that and more money coming into all of these different corporations and sponsors and bowl games, there's going to be a lot of conversation saying, we got name, image, and likeness, but you guys are still using our bodies for 17 games, maybe some more compensations coming that way. So that's another conversation that we're going to have there. But again, 12 games apparently is the favored model, according to Pete Thamble of YahooSports.com. We'll keep you up to date. I get Friday a big date for that as they wrap up some meetings and get there's been a group that's been putting together their recommendations after research. And they're going to meet on Friday. So we'll update you when any news comes out of that. Nothing would happen this year or next year. But as soon as 2023, we could potentially see a new college football playoff format there. Again, huge night coming up in Philadelphia. You have the Hawks and the 76ers coming up, Braves and the Phillies. Drew Smyly on the mound for the Braves against Aaron Nola. Just need one of those. You know, it's a coin flip with Drew Smyly. We could use one of the coin flip to land on our side this time and get the dominant Drew Smyly
sad face
out there, because I don't know how much longer I can take the Braves just like hanging on the far side of the fence of 500. I don't know how much longer I can mentally handle that. But again, Drew Smyly on the mound for the Braves tonight. But 76ers, Hawks, game two. I told y'all in the first segment, I got a bad feeling that the 76ers are going to wax the Hawks tonight. Then they're going to come out, have that fan base rocking. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, getting it going. Am I wrong, Cam? You got a better feeling about the Hawks than I do?
I agree with you, but I don't think they're going to get rocked. I think they'll probably lose by 5 to 6 points. Philly just makes adjustments. They're a better team, but they just make adjustments, and they're going to beat the Hawks. They should take one at home. Hawks did what they were supposed to do.
Let me ask you this. If the Hawks are to win tonight, what are they going to have to do?
Exactly what they did in game one, but take care of the ball more. Hit shots. Trey's going to have to get 30 in a trip, in a double-double, not a trip-dub. And take care of the ball more than what they did down the stretch, but really hit shots. They hit 23.
Yeah. How do you think Nate McMillan approaches the traps? Because there was no plan for it, it appeared, in game one. It was mostly just panic and pass. How do you think he handles those traps coming up in game two?
The thing that was making me mad, as you grow older, you know not to go in the corners, not to go in the wings, stay in the middle of the court. If Trey stays in the middle of the court, you can't really trap him, because then that's when he could turn the corner fast, because he's a quick player, and get it out to somebody else. So he needs to stay in the middle of the court, stop going to the wings and the left wing. And that's probably be the adjustment.
Again, that game coming up tonight on TNT. Game two in that series, and the Hawks come back for two games at home at State Farm Arena. They want to get into some quotes from minicamp. Arthur Smith, his first minicamp with the Falcons. He kind of went 0-100 on us, dude, a little bit.
Hey, we were – this man sitting next to me went on a 20-minute picture looking to see if Arthur Smith is a vampire.
I think he
not.
Might be.
Dude, it was like 20 minutes of just, you know, looking through pictures.
If Arthur Smith is a vampire, I'm glad. because that means
well, I'm glad you gave me a heads up just in case.
Probably has a millennia of knowledge that he's going to be bringing into this. But we did get his first quotes of the minicamp so far, and they asked him what his goals were for minicamp, and he gave the most coach response I've ever heard in my life, which kind of makes me happy. He says, "We're trying to put our schemes in." So, all right, Arthur. We appreciate that.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, but then he went 0-100 on us, and then he was asked about how the offense would change without Julio Jones. Arthur, he didn't say, you can never replace a guy like Julio Jones, right? You can never replace the type of person Julio Jones was, what he meant in the locker room. Julio Jones, one of the best players ever. Didn't say any of that. Says, quote, "I don't worry about players I never coached." I mean, Cam, damn.
Dang. Dang, that's kind of okay. That's pretty harsh, but I'm liking it. I'm liking the confidence.
Me too. Yeah,
okay. I like it too because it wasn't coach speak. But I mean, damn.
No, dude, ain't no. Hey, I don't know the guy. He's
a little hard.
He's, I don't know nobody. Apparently, it just started happening once they got the coach change. And when I came along, he was like, "Still not good enough. So I ain't good enough for you. Goodbye."
Well, there are some interesting reports coming out now that Julio Jones was like disconnected with the organization following the Dan Quinn firing.
Yeah.
But that's interesting to me because isn't the whole thing about it? Julio Jones said, "I want to play for a winner." But then you got upset when Dan Quinn got fired.
Exactly. Following, he's going to be a Hawk. I mean, a Falcon.
Following three consecutive losing. All right. I mean, that one was interesting to me, but I'm still not convinced that Arthur Smith isn't a sleeper agent. You know, Agent Smith for the Tennessee Titans that was sent here from the Tennessee Titans to send Julio to Tennessee.
An infiltrated vampire is the head coach of the Falcons.
I don't know, man. I'm looking at this offense and the wide receiver room.
Love
not,
it. I love it.
I don't know if I love it. I just don't
Russell
think it's as
Gage,
bad as people think. Russell
Calvin
Gage is
Ridley,
fine.
Dude, and you might
yeah,
as well
I like,
just,
I like Gage.
Yeah, I like Gage a lot.
I think Russell Gage is good. I don't know if I say I like Russell Gage a lot. I think he's a very average NFL wide receiver.
He'll get 800 yards.
So he's a very average NFL wide receiver. Calvin Ridley, I think, is really good. I think Calvin Ridley.
He'll get 13.
I think Calvin Ridley is pretty elite. But outside of that, there's big question marks for that number three wide receiver. I think what we're going to see.
Falcons just drafted one.
Technically a tight end. We'll call him a weapon.
Oh, dude, lines up.
He'll be in the slot. I think technically what you're going to see is Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts in line on the right side will be Hayden Hurst, and then Russell Gage on the outside. We're number 14 this year instead of number 83.
And then you got the thighs right next to you, old Matt Ryan. Mike Davis. You know, Watch out, big dog.
He doesn't miss leg day, but now with the cap situation the way it is, Falcons can sign that rookie class and potentially bring in some more free agents. We got to take a quick break here, though. We'll come back. Final segment of Second Down next. Big show coming up today on 3 and Out. We'll hear from former SEC freshman of the year, two-time All-SEC running back, number 12 pick of the Denver Broncos in the 2009 NFL draft. No Sean Moreno coming up at 4 o'clock here on ESPN Radio. Looking forward to that conversation with the all-time great from the SEC there. Also, more previews coming up for the Phillies and the Braves tonight. Go ahead and sweep the Phils, man.
Cam can't
sleep at night because the Braves are just under 500. He's having nightmares, rolling around, tossing and turning, waking up in a cold sweat because the Braves just cannot get to over 500. So if the Braves could just win a couple games, get over 500, I know we would really appreciate it here because Cam's just falling apart. But guys, we're like 12 weeks away from college football starting. And it's just stories like this today and thinking about what's coming up on September 4th. It just makes me excited, man. This is going to be a long, long few months. But we have SEC Media Days coming up in July. It's going to get here quick. But these are the doldrums as we wait for football.
That's in the media biz. That's when boys become men and girls become women. During SEC Media Days. Yeah, you want to work media. Hustle.
I think really it's just for the producers that have to sit back in the studio and put everything together. All us talent types are just kind of hanging out, talking to cool people, and then just shipping all of it back to you guys to fix.
So fun. So I love it. It's fun.
And Cody goes into like locked in mode.
I do. And like, no one talked to me. I was like, no one's talking to me today, right? And they're like, okay. And like, I'll have like interns come in. We're not talking today, okay? I don't even need you today. Go home.
Yeah, because all it is us interviewing cool people and saying, Cody, figure it out.
Yep. Edit it, put it in the log, do all this
stuff.
Did
we time out these interviews to make it fit into a clock? No, not at all. But Cody, you can figure it out. You're the man. Hey, we appreciate it. We got to go to lunch. Cody, we love you, bro. Figure it out.
And drive back from wherever.
Three and outs coming up next. No Sean Moreno going to join the guys, as well as Rich Styles of the Back Nine Boys. All that coming up next on ESPN Radio.